The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mike Rupert, it is Sunday, December 18th, 2011, 3 days away from the winter solstice, less and less light every day, and boy, is that a great metaphor for the world we live in. We can be certain that in 4 days there will be more sunlight every day, and we hope that that's going to be the way it works for the rest of the world outside here, but we have hope, and there's reason to hope and reason to hang on. We will be down. A week from tonight is Christmas, and a week following that, same day, Sunday, is January 1st. So I'm expecting not to be back with you guys for 3 weeks. And in the 17 months I've been doing this show, I think I've only taken 2 Sundays off because I was traveling, and I want you all to know that I'm going to have Little Jones working here. I'm going to miss you guys. But it's only 3 weeks. Of course, the world might end before then, so in which case it's not a problem, right? We just have to keep the right perspective here. There's a lot of things I want to talk about tonight. It's kind of a special show. It occurred to me when we had, I think it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, we had Dave DeGraw, Ian Escuela, and Shamar Thomas from Occupy Wall Street as guests on the show, and I emailed him after the show. It was a fabulous show, but I said, damn, we need some women in here. You know, and everybody said, yeah, and that brought up a very current theme for me, a very strong theme that I want to kind of dance with tonight and see how we do that, which is to honor the feminine and to uphold it and to welcome its liberation. And I think the Occupy movement has had a lot to do with that, but there have been so many women who have been so important to me and who have been such powerful influences on me. I'm not going to do a whole list tonight, but tonight for me is also kind of about honoring the feminine, too, and we're going to try to do that. I got a very special song we're going to play right before the station break. Okay, World War III updates. Man, wow. This has been, like, beyond a nail-biter. I mean, hostilities have already happened. We've had 3 Iranian military facilities, 2 of them nuclear facilities, have blown up. We've had 10 Syrian pilots assassinated. We've had a U.S. drone hacked and captured in Iran. There's been a lot of updates on it this week, and it's very clear that the belligerency was increasing, as was the rhetoric, and what I've always been scared of or alerted to is are there military movements that back up what's going on? And we've seen confirmation of a lot of that this week. Sabelle Edmonds, who is a 9/11 legend, and rightly so. I know Sabelle. I've met her. She was an FBI translator. She is a very brave woman. She did a wonderful video that went on Russia Today this week, with very good, solid documentation that U.S. military personnel were drilling right on the Syrian border. But this is absolutely a multi-dimensional game that's being played here. There is a new development tonight, and I have seen some signs in the last 48 hours that the West and the United States are backing down a little bit, and I really think they have been outmaneuvered on the chessboard. That's what we're going to talk about here for a few minutes tonight. It's very important stuff. Russia Today has a video that just came out today. This is Press TV, Iran's Press TV. My apologies. That just came out today. It'll be on our world news desk with a Russian military expert. And this guy has great bona fides. He lays them all out. He's a government official. He was like a deputy undersecretary of defense or something like that. But he says very clearly that Russia will stop any attack on Iran. which means Russia is, when they the words are chosen carefully. Stop means prevent. Stop means interrupt. And apparently that technology exists, but it's very clear that Russia and China have made it clear that any attack on Iran will lead, as we've all known for a long time, to World War III. And, of course, we had this week something that just infuriated me. It just, oh, my God. We had a ruling in New York State from a U.S. District Court judge. A lawsuit was filed alleging that Iran had a role in the attacks of September the 11th. Well, the suit was won by default, meaning that Iran didn't show up to even bother to try to defend against such ridiculous nonsense. But that, of course, was heralded in the press and played out in the press like a federal court finds that Iran had a role in 9/11. You can imagine what I did when I heard that. I felt exactly the way that I did when I went to Occupy Santa Rosa right after the major violence at Occupy Oakland, just pissed off, determined to put my body in between the cops and the people, and there were a great many veterans who showed up feeling the same way. It's like, this is absolute stupidity. It's absolute nonsense. But we all know that. I mean, it was relayed to me some time ago by someone who would have had absolute reason to know. He had good credibility that in his first briefing as Director of Central Intelligence, William Casey, the legendary Bill Casey of Iran-Contra and the drugs and the death squads and all that, who was a stockbroker, by the way, said that we will know that we have been successful when everything that the American people believe is false. Well, if you look at the mainstream media today, that's exactly what's happening. And you're not getting told about this enormous game of chess that's now swirling around bloody Barack's fiendish, salivating desire to go beat up on Iran. He's not going to do it. I pray he doesn't do it or try to. There's an interesting dimension that has played out with regard to ISAF and the NATO forces in Afghanistan. Now, since the since 24 Pakistani troops were killed by NATO gunships, Pakistan has shut off all supply routes to the ISAF forces in Afghanistan. Non-lethal aid comes only from Russia. Pakistan is now talking about imposing a tax. Fuel shipments are not getting through. And ISAF is hurting. I'm telling you, they're hurting. But what's been revealed, I think, as events unfolded with that during the week, is that I've always said that, you know, we went into Afghanistan to control the opium trade, but now it's becoming very apparent that we went into Afghanistan also to have an eastern front from which to attack Iran. And I speculated this week that perhaps the NATO Hilo attacks were intentional, designed to protect the flank from any backdoor attacks on ISAF forces. Spooky stuff, but ISAF is isolated, and Russia has made it clear that they will shut off air supplies from air bases in the stands. And then everything else has started to show other dimensions. Throughout the week, I've been reading stories showing increasing unrest in Iraq as the last U.S. troops left. They left yesterday. You know, CNN, hurrah, the war's over, we won. Whoopie-doo, that's not what the rest of the world is seeing. But there's a very serious unrest in Iraq, which is serving as a battleground, a surrogate battleground for the Shias allied with Iran and the Sunnis allied with Saudi Arabia. That's one thing. And the al-Maliki government is in deep trouble. I mean, there are some very serious stories we have had on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. Laying out the very serious unrest. The Kurds up north are very nervous. That's a whole separate story. But the same day, the very same day that the last U.S. troops leave Iraq, Nouri al-Maliki sends a delegation to Damascus, Syria, to act as a broker, and President al-Assad has said that the Iraqi delegation has been supremely helpful. Now, Iraq can play a peacemaker or a broker. And Syria appears to be getting off the hook, not a little bit, just a little bit, in that the Arab League deadlines that were firm and, you know, like pounding shoes on the table have now softened. There's supposed to be a move next week to take a resolution to the United Nations, which will never get out of the Security Council because Russia and China will veto. But I think the U.S. is saying chicken here, and it's very clear that the United States is kind of getting a serious public spanking right now. Our press will never tell you that, but anything that backs us off from this absolutely stupid World War III, and anything that makes these maniacs back off a little bit is welcome at this point. We are not out of the woods. The tensions are still there. We're watching it closely on Collapse Net. We keep good track of it for you there. And you all know that we've been giving you probably the best analysis you can find out about that out there. Something else of extreme importance this week. We had several stories, but one in Environmental News and one in The Independent from UK. About the fact that the Siberian tundra near the Arctic Circle is defrosting, it is melting. And as that happens, methane hydrate gas, which I first learned of from Colin Campbell on about 2003, all of that frozen methane, I mean hundreds and hundreds of billions of tons, is being released into the atmosphere. And two stories from a Russian scientist named Igor Semilitov, of the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, said that he was measuring plumes, or I don't know what you call it, the towers, vortexes, a kilometer across, hundreds of them, of methane pouring into the atmosphere. Now, if you don't know, methane is a greenhouse gas 20 times more toxic than carbon dioxide, and from the wilderness, and it's, let's say 04 or 05, we were tracking a lot of research on this at the time. It's very clear that science was unanimous in saying that if all of that methane was released, it was a point of no return, a tipping point in climate change that could be deadly for all life on the planet. We need to remember a lot that we live on this Mother Earth, and that she is the ultimate judge, the ultimate umpire. She'll make the last call, and she trumps everything. And this is very serious stuff. But we are continuing to destroy the environment, of course, just as fast, if not faster, than we ever did. There'll be a very important story on the World News Desk tomorrow. This is hot off the Bloomberg presses tonight. China local debts for two big projects dwarf official data. You read this story, it is just chock full of horrible news, making it very clear that China has hit the brick wall of its subprime mortgage crisis and worse. So there is no turning back. We don't even need to talk about Europe anymore. That's dead. It's done. It's flopping. The darkness is increasing all around us. But that doesn't mean we give up hope. That means that we pay attention so that we know which directions to run. Here's a little quote from the Environmental News Network piece on the methane. Deep under the icy waters of the Arctic, Russian scientists have discovered vast stores of methane, the potent greenhouse gas, far worse than CO2. The scientists sampled the waters along the East Siberian Arctic Shelf and discovered that methane that was once dormant at the seafloor is starting to bubble up to the surface in enormous plumes. As the climate warms in the Arctic, the sea ice retreats, the sunlight penetrates the water, and the frozen seafloor thaws, causing the release of methane in a gaseous state. The Russian team found over 100 sites where large quantities of methane were released, indicating accelerated Arctic warming in the future. And as I said before, the article says that a hundred of those were a kilometer across, going straight up into the atmosphere. Pretty scary. I also noticed, we're going to talk about some good news. There's some very inspiring stuff tonight. But Bradley Manning is going on trial. And I am just sick to death at the stories that are surfacing, attacking his personal life, attacking his, he had a feminine alter ego. The dude had the balls to tell people that murders were being committed and it's wrong. I don't care if he dresses like a Martian. Anybody with that kind of courage deserves support, you know? Excuse me, I have a little sore throat tonight. But it's mild because I'm eating real healthy. That just so infuriates me. The issue is not what he does or what he thinks or what he feels. I have girly parts, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be letting them out tonight. And you know, I still salute him, and I just think it is so sick that that you know, even Reuters and everybody else, and his defense is that you know. Bradley Manning, you hang in there. You did good. You did right. You did what honorable warriors should have done. Hang tight, buddy. Hang tight. There's some great stuff about Wukong that we're going to talk about probably after we get done with the break, because I kind of want to set up a very special song tonight. We were going to have a show at some point with the women of Occupy, and I want to give a shout out to two women brought up by the male crew I had on, Katie Davison and Laura Gottesdiener. You're both very revered there at Occupy Wall Street. I know at Occupy Santa Rosa, I developed an amazing friendship and enjoyed very powerful work with Errol Florham and her great family. And there have been just and quite a lot of talk now about Gaian spirituality. You know, we call her Mother Earth, and it's very clear that men have been running this planet for a long time, and I quite frankly don't think we've done a good job of it. And I'm one of those people. I wrote in my book Confronting Collapse, my second book, and I actually got this line from an old friend, Mark Rabinowitz. We were on the same subject. We had it clearly. But he said, there will never be balance on this planet until there is absolute equality between the sexes. And I think the next paradigm is going to have to shift to full feminine control, because women will be smart enough to share. I'm sure of that. But we call, we Gaians, we pagans, we, you know, whatever you want to call us, we refer to this planet as a her, as a she. And there are many of us who salute that and welcome that and experience the awesome power when the goddess is honored and space is held for her. So I had this amazing experience this last week. Actually, it was over a couple of weeks, but I ran into at a local club here in Sebastopol, Aubergine, a wonderful singer-songwriter named Diane Patterson. And we're going to hear a song from her tonight. And you guys who have followed me for a long time, you know my heart, and you know I'm mushy. And the reason I'm setting this song up to play and lead into the station break is because I know I'm going to be crying like a baby at the end of it. So take that, all you people. You know, all you people who want. Try to teach that someone who tells the truth and blows a whistle and has integrity is a deviant. Well, I'm going to be crying. You can call me a sissy if you want to, but I don't think a lot of people are going to buy that. So I went out and I heard this particular song. It's called High Sierra Morning, performed live, and it has moved me no end. And so Diane was on her way to Hawaii, but we had this beautiful connect where we both went out to see Sean Colvin on Wednesday night, and that was on my bucket list, and Sean was terrific. And then I got this CD, and I said, okay, you know, I owe so much to women, and maybe I should name a few. Jenna Orkin, first and foremost. I asked her if she could be on tonight. She has to work. We'll try to get her on here because those of you who have followed the blog and From the Wilderness and the collapse net, you all know and adore her. Very few of you have gotten to hear her voice. But so many wonderful feminine, female influences along the way that gave me the strength to bend through life experiences that would have killed less stupid people. I don't know how you put that, but and so I really want to salute that going into the winter solstice, going into this dark place on the astral plane, on the physical plane, and also to honor the dark place that we're in, kind of remind you that there's always hope. The song we're going to play is called High Sierra Morning. It's by Diane Patterson, and I'll give you the information when we come back from the break. D-I-A-N-N-E, one, only one N, Diane Patterson, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N.net. She's on CD Baby, like New White Trash is. She's awesome. Here's High Sierra Morning. Thank you.
got the law on the wall, and we've come up red. Getting dying soldiers sold for lies that we said. Now we can't escape from. Another long war, and we've come up red. Getting dying soldiers sold for lies that we said. Now we can't escape from.
Yeah. That was Diane Patterson right before the break. Diane Patterson. I mean, do yourself a favor. This is my Christmas gift to all you guys. I just found this amazing music, this amazing singer-songwriter, great woman. Her CD is World Awake, and she has a new CD called Holy Days of Winter. I'm going to be diving into that this week, but you can find all about her at DianePatterson.net. One N in Diane. DianePatterson.net. She just rocks. All right, so we're now the second half of the show, and the song we came back in with was the first song that I co-wrote with New White Trash called We Can't Escape From, that also features some amazing vocals by Miss Kristen Vigard, a bandmate. And you can find us at newwhitetrash.com. And I'm getting turned on to some really cool music here lately, and I want to shout out to everybody who sent a direct to us. I'm trying to listen to all of it, and if I keep seeing stuff and hearing stuff like I've been hearing, you know I'm going to share it with this great audience. If you want to call in tonight, my two subjects, like for the rest of the show, are Wukan, which is a little town in China that's kind of standing China on its head, and Don't Shoot the Sheriff, and I'll save that for later. But if you want to call in tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888. 1-888-874-4888. What's on your mind these last few days before the holidays and the darkest part of the year? If you want to email me direct at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. All right, so I want to talk about Wukan. Talk about inspiring. There's this little fishing village of 20,000 people down in southeast China. And they're just tired of the corruption, and they just had enough. And even though China has like 180,000 documented civil unrest events a year, this is the first one that's ever made the Chinese Communist Party back down. And what kind of tactics were they using in Wukan? Gee, absolute nonviolence, complete solidarity, and being willing to sit there and take anything, and which in this case included tear gas, water cannons, and a few other things that the government threw at them, indicating they were willing to die. And this has been going on for about a week now, and the Chinese government has backed away, and they've laid siege to this village of Wukan. And so the only food that comes in now is brought by people from neighboring villages who carry it in to keep, they carry in enough to keep these 20,000 people eating. Oh, I love this. And I don't, you know, let's get this straight, world out there paying attention. It's not just Occupy in the U.S. What happened in Moscow and what's happening in Wukan is all Occupy. It's the same virus, and it's a good one. And it's working. Now, there's some real poetry of what's happening in Wukan. One of the leaders, Shui Jinbo, was taken into the custody, as you know, happened here, but you know, apparently he was beaten to death. There are witness reports that, you know, he was faced with all, you know what it looks like. And but, of course, the Chinese government, the local government, says that he died from a heart attack, and they're refusing to give his body back, and believe me, that's something you don't do, especially in that society and in that culture. A witness said there were cuts and bruises on the corners of his mouth and on his forehead, and both his nostrils were full of blood, his 21-year-old daughter reported. What this was all triggered by was a huge corporate land grab, taking away the food that the people, the land that the people need to grow food to feed China's already failed real estate bubble. They have, like, you know, how many tens of millions of unoccupied properties that nobody's moving into, to, you know, ghost cities, and yet they were stealing more land. And Britain's Telegraph wrote yesterday about Wukan. During another day of protests and marches, Wukan village representative Lin Zuyan, addressed a crowd of more than 6,000, pledging to fight with their lives against the corrupt system which has robbed them of their coastal land and of their village leader, Zhui Jinbo. We give the local government and police 5 days to hand back Zhui's body. If not, we shall climb over our barricades and march on the Lufeng Town Hall and try to get his remains, said Mr. Lin. And guess what? They're also organizing another major march. Now, this has been going on for 3 months. I apologize. 3 months. And this is a Tiananmen Square moment for the world, but it is a true sign that the spirit of Occupy is alive and well, and our power is not diminished. I was kind of concerned by the events in Egypt this week. Very, very bloody, murderous people killed all over the place in Egypt. And talk about the kind of duplicity that we've seen here in the States. It's even worse. The Egyptian head of state says he's now killing, beating up, killing the same people that he was negotiating with as a friendly partner sympathetic to their demands. So that's a little heads up for what's out there, too. You know, this beast is far from dead. It is far from sane. But there is some amazing courage being displayed around the world right now, and I wish I could find all the examples of that, as well as we find at CollapseNet, all the stories about what's really going on out there. And speaking of CollapseNet, real quick, I want to thank everybody at CollapseNet. We had some serious problems with cyber attacks. We've been talking about that. They appear to be subsiding a little bit. Maybe the bad guys are just taking time off for Christmas. I don't know. But we do know that we have friends out there, and the solidarity that we feel around the world does have power. So we always need to remember that whenever any of our brothers and sisters in any movement needs trouble, we need to speak their names and bear witness. And let everybody know, because it's really nice to feel that you're not alone. So now let's talk about don't shoot your sheriff. I'm working on a large article, and I'm going to use this 3 weeks off, and believe me, I can do with a long winter's nap. I've been pushing it for a while. On a large essay, I'm going to research it pretty well, about the power of the county sheriff. And if you go on YouTube, I'm not going to give the name of the video now because I'm going to package this in the article, but there was an amazing video on YouTube of five Northern California sheriffs who were absolutely standing up to defy the illegality and the corruption of the federal government. And county sheriffs can do that. And that's something important as we enter this phase of collapse to remember, when all other forms of government are going to become increasingly dysfunctional. There is one official, an elected official, the only elected law enforcement official in the country directly elected by the people. That's a county sheriff, and that's the way it is in almost every county in this country. And there is a clear body of U.S. constitutional law saying not even the President of the United States or the EPA or, you know, whatever agency has the power to go in and defy an order from a county sheriff, because he is directly elected by the people. And this has been known among those that we would call on the right or conservative. There were many mentions of Tea Party, a couple mentions of Tea Party in this excellent video that I saw. Very, very honorable men. Because you know that all they cared about was representing the interests of the people who live in their county and keeping them safe. That doesn't mean, you know, whatever. But there again, place determines everything, what you need in a space. So if it's a Modoc County or a Siskiyou County or what, you know, any of the counties up north, that's a direct, uninterrupted feedback loop that is contained within the county and the place. And if you've got a county sheriff with cojones, you know, with the fiber, for it. A county sheriff can absolutely stop all FDA raids of raw milk, organic foods, you know, and nobody, there is no constitutional power anywhere that will allow the federal government to override that. That's a very powerful thing, and it needs to be amplified now. We also see, you know, we see wonderful stuff happening with the Grange on a local level. And we see interactions between county sheriffs in some counties in California and the Grange, and it is building something that could be extremely powerful. So wherever you live, if you're in the United States, and you might check your laws, check in other countries. But if anywhere in the United States, and it could be a big city. I mean, the sheriff of Los Angeles County is elected. And the president cannot tell Lee Baca to what to do or tell him not to do anything. The power that the federal government has since the Patriot Act, and I wrote a good essay called "The F Word," which you can find on the From the Wilderness website, called "The F Word." Right after the Patriot Act came out, I read the whole thing from cover to cover, and that was. That was hard work. But what became very clear to me is that since the Patriot Act, the federal government is into every computer system of every law enforcement agency in the country. Most of the radio communications, the satellites, the links, and everything else are all federally funded and controlled by Department of Homeland Security, which can get into any law enforcement agency's files. So that's the hammer that the federal government has over county sheriffs, but you know, it's become pretty clear to me, and I'm going to be looking into this more, that many county sheriffs are aware of this and taking measures, because the corruption in Washington is so utterly apparent, obvious, odious. You know, it's the turd in the punch bowl, so to speak. And there are people doing that. So wherever you live in the United States, if you live here. Start looking into your county sheriff, and start organizing, and start trying to interact with your county sheriff, and feel them out, because it is an elected office. And trust me, if there's any office in any place that you want to control as you build lifeboats locally, it's the county sheriff. Yeah, that's just critically important stuff. So, don't shoot the sheriff. You know, that's what nobody's emailing, nobody's calling tonight. All right, well, here's what I can do then, as we spend these last minutes of this last show before I get 3 weeks off and we come back in 2012 when the days are getting longer. Every day I get an email, two emails actually, with stories that are called from around the world. That's how we do what we do at CollapseNet, and I want to thank you all of your support for us, and thank you for all the recognition that you're sending back to us on how useful we have been to you guys. So I can run down through some of these some of the stories that are going to be on our world news desk tomorrow. Lufthansa cargo, okay, airlines are shutting down, we know that, blah blah blah, okay, everything is melting down. I love reading these headlines, actually. Yeah, it's but I have to read the articles, too. World's richest Arabs see wealth jump 5% during the current downturn. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Michelle Chelsadovsky was a good friend. I met him in about 1999, I think, with Ramsey Clark. Maybe 2000, but throughout the early, the first 2 years after 9/11, Michelle was everywhere, and he was brilliant, and he was forceful, and he stood up this week. He's a professor of economics at the University of Ottawa, and he has a new article out on his research, globalresearch.ca, the globalization of war, the military roadmap to World War III. And Michelle has been right on the money. Source him as much as Paul Thompson, more than anybody else, in crossing the Rubicon for the work on 9/11. Looking down here, The U.S. is sending early warning aircraft to Taiwan. Yeah, well, that's the other side of the dark news. The U.S. military is going to be deploying in the Philippines and Formosa and Taiwan, I believe, as we all get ready to fight over the South China Sea. That has not gone away. Okay, the new story on Wuhan. Rebel Chinese villagers demand elections. Turn to central leaders. Now, this is off World News Daily, but it's a Reuters story. So the Wuhan citizens are now demanding elections. We like that. Keep going. Don't give up. Chinese village plans. Wuhan's getting a little bit of coverage. Good. 50 arrested as Occupy Wall Street tries to seize church. That's Trinity Church in New York. And we expect that. That was a due diligence thing, and I was glad to see that it's done. There was a good essay about focusing on private property, but you know, nobody's going to lay out a map for Occupy. It's just going to show up wherever it shows up, and it's much better to watch than it is to predict. Protesters camp out at Obama headquarters. Talk Occupy caucus plans. Ooh, now that's kind of kinky. Hold on a minute. Let me look at that. Protesters camp out at Obama headquarters, talk Occupy caucus plans. They want to occupy the Democratic Party caucuses. Ooh, that should be sporting. Pass the popcorn. What else? President Dmitry Medvedev admits Russia needs a reform as protesters plan further rallies. Occupy goal. Keep it alive through the winter, guys. Keep it alive. Keep it going. Korea North Korea has collapsed. Everybody's kind of missed that. And all the other stuff. Japan is real problematic right now. I've got more headlines about Japan. And of course, hey, just like Barack Obama saying he had killed Osama bin Laden, the Japanese premier or the prime minister announced that Fukushima reactors had achieved cold shutdown. I love it. There is serious talk of nationalizing the Fukushima reactors. That's because TEPCO is going under. There's nothing left to do. And Japan, of course, is utterly broke. And we've had some serious stories showing that Japan is being extremely hard hit by everything else crashing, too. So we remain on that front, on the edge of the economic abyss, which I kind of wish would get on with itself, and so that we can get on to doing something else. China is liquidating some debt holdings, and in the U.S., man, the poverty numbers here in the United States are just amazing. We'll have a story up tomorrow, 50 economic numbers from 2011 that are almost too crazy to believe. Basically now, half the people are poor. Very poor. Drug shortages continue to be at an all-time high, and everything else is shutting down. We all know that. So we're back to, I think at this point, as I was assessing this week and reading all the notes and the stories and watching this, there were several times this week where I just said, we're all just spectators now. You know, I don't know what I can advocate. But that's where it becomes important to remember that faith in things unseen is critical, and it's what sustains you. We got a caller. Great, Joshua from Connecticut. You there?
Yes. How's it going?
Okay.
Cool. You hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Quick. My situation is I have a Volkswagen sports car type thing. And I have an older Volvo, both which are not standing up to New England's new, you know, lack of road maintenance. And I'm kind of in a corner where it's like I want to buy something real robust, like ironically, a Jeep Rubicon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, should I put myself in the debt to do it, or should I try to make with what I got work?
Well, again, everybody's got to make their own choices on this. But what you need to ask yourself is, and let's be real clear about it, everybody can see that this economic paradigm is collapsing. And the question for the balancing act for most people is, if I go into debt to get something important, it's a hard good. Having a good vehicle is going to be important, and you want one that will last, because you know. You can fill in the rest yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into your budget or your personal finances, but my gut reaction when you asked the question was, I said, yeah, go ahead and get it, you know. But I'm not, you know, again, don't lay it all on me, because I don't know what your personal situation is. But
right.
I am very focused on where I live here in Sebastopol. We work very hard to make ourselves as prepared as possible. And our priority has been, and I've encouraged all of my subscribers at CollapseNet to do this for about a year now, is get the hard goods that you need while you can.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that very quickly here, buying an automobile is going to become extremely difficult for both financial and availability reasons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm seeing that already. I mean, here in Connecticut, just over the past 2 years, they really cut back on maintenance of roads, and I've had a lowered Volkswagen. And it's not cutting the mustard anymore, even though I always kept on to it because it was efficient and reliable. But the potholes are beating it up now.
Yeah, well, you know, you might save it as a backup if you need it, you know. It's very important to me to have all of my shit squared away and to have it all in good working order. And I've been telling everybody, you know, just get what you need that you know is going to sustain you if it's a hard good. You know, we all run risk. I carry just a little bit of debt only because I haven't been able to pay it off. But you know, there's risks on every side of this. But I'd rather have the vehicle.
Right.
All right, man. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
All right. So anyway, we're down to the last. Few minutes here, and I just really wanted to stop and check in and to acknowledge so many great women who have saved my life and been there at key moments, not just Jenna Orkin and Carolyn Baker, but you know, a list that we could go on with all night long. And it's not just so much acknowledging them as people, you know, as individuals, but to acknowledge that quality. And I think that was one of the insights that I had in my experience at Occupy Santa Rosa, was in those safe spaces that were created in the camps, I saw men and women working in a really truly equal setting that was amazing. And what I saw as a result of the interaction with that was extremely powerful. Those camps were very threatening for a lot of reasons. But... you know, it's 3 days away from the shortest day of the year, and this is a time when things go down into the darkness, but they sleep and they chill out and they watch and they wait and they await a returning of light and a return back to a growing season. Maybe on a larger scale, that's what's happening even on the whole planet or the whole universe. And even if we should be stupid enough and never underestimate the stupidity of our species to destroy the planet, to destroy even in a nuclear war, life will go on, and there is a consciousness behind that I look forward to meeting all of you in someday and sharing with you more on this show. It's been a great 17 months that we've been doing the Lifeboat Hour here, and I know I'm going to have some serious withdrawals, being away from you for 3 weeks, but know that everything is good. You can always find me on CollapseNet, where we'll be continuing to do. In January, I think I may have some fun things coming up. I'm trying not to plan too far in advance, but I should be going down to L.A. to do a show with Joe Rogan, who is an amazing dude down in L.A. I can maybe connect with some old friends down in L.A. for a few days. Got a speaking gig up in Northern California, and I'm staying in touch with everybody who's building lifeboats around the world. And so why don't we just leave it at that tonight? It's a little shorter than usual show, but I don't feel the need to burn up the air. That was an amazing song from Diane Patterson. I want to thank her for that. And I love all you guys, and I want you to be safe, and I want you to nurture each other through the holidays here. And spirit willing, we'll see you next year in 2012. on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.
Trade the middle for the-